Welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast, a podcast for leaders and by leaders, where they share their secret sauce to success with technology, culture, and people. So hold on, because another great episode starts right now. Welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Inglero. Another great episode, another great guest, and I'm not going to disappoint you again, because we have a special person on this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, straight from Chennai, India. Is that right, Annetta? She's not from Chennai, India. That's just where we first met. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I travel the world to find the best people to bring on this podcast. So without further ado, in this episode, we are honored to have Annetta Berg, Senior Vice President of Digital Supply Chain for Orkla IT in the house. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Annetta. Annetta, how are you today?
Hi, Thomas. I'm fine. And thank you for that lovely introduction.
Now, let's clear it up, everybody. Are you from Chennai, India, or are you Norwegian?
Unfortunately, not as exotic as coming from Chennai. I'm very much Norwegian, coming from Fredrikstad.
Fredrikstad, Norway, yeah. Chennai, India. There's a lot of similarity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let's start there. Listen, why don't you introduce yourself? Other than you're from Fredrikstad, and that, to the people listening, you know, everybody lives around the world, so you have to talk a little about what is Fredrikstad and why is it so special and all that. But please tell us about Orkla IT. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Well, of course, starting then with Orkla, as you said, that's a Nordic branded consumer goods company and a number one player here in the Nordics. So I think if you meet people on the street in Norway, I mean, they will know tons of our brands and also in Sweden. And then the further away you come from Norway, of course, the knowledge about Orkla probably goes down, but we own actually also brands in India. So Orkla is a global player, and Orkla IT is the central digital center of excellence for Orkla. So we are both a vendor and a customer kind of at the same time. And personally, I've been actually in Orkla my whole career, working 17 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I think that also says a lot about the group, because you can do several things if you are passionate about making your career and making it interesting. You can find valuable positions and then even maybe sometimes construct them yourself. Yeah. So home to grow, that's the slogan for the employee branding in Orkla, and I actually think it's true. And currently, I then head a unit in the Orkla IT that's called Digital Supply Chain. And I think for me, that's like a sweet spot, because I've been working a lot with IT for many years, but actually from the finance perspective, working several years as a CFO. And then I was actually a CFO for a physical supply chain in Orkla Foods. And that is very nice to use, I mean, the business and the IT put together. So I'm really happy about what I'm doing now. And I think even though processes and supply chain and IT, that's cool, I mean, the people, that's what it's all about. So I have currently 90 resources working for me. And we have, I think, twice as many people in Cognizant working for my people again. So that's a big, happy family, hopefully. And I really enjoy working in that intersection, I mean, between the business and the IT. So, yeah, I think that was some kind of an introduction to us.
I think that was such a juicy introduction. I got so many questions for you. So here we go. Listen, I think you are from Fredrikstad, and for the people listening, that's not even a city. Is that a town?
In Nordic measures, unfortunately, it is a city, yeah. So, but it's not very large, yeah. So,
Okay.
yeah.
It's an interesting miniature town. Everybody fresh out of
Yeah.
Hismina. But
Yeah. Oh, that's fine.
the point I'm making is that really the theme of this discussion really is that you're a senior vice president and you're a woman and you're from Fredrikstad, which has like one post office and one post box. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Okay. It's not that small. Okay. That was a joke, ladies and gentlemen. But my point is, my God, you have achieved so much coming from a small little town. And your enthusiasm and your positivity and being the CFO of different things. But, take us on that journey, because what the listeners are going to learn by hearing your story is, well, if you're a female listening and a male, what it takes to go from a point in your life, to go from this level to that level, right? From a little town to a senior vice president of a major corporation, to having the challenges of a woman in a predominantly male-dominated world, right? If you don't mind, could you mind just like growing up in, the Big Apple of Fredrikstad.
Quite similar to New York in
It's
every way.
a mirror copy, absolutely. Growing up there, did you have those ambitions to, someday be a CFO and have a senior vice president and all that? Or like, how did that happen? Are you wired one way, or please elaborate.
Yeah, I think it's of course a very good question, and I don't know if I have reflected fully on it. So, but I will try my best here to reflect on the live. But I think growing up, of course, I've had always like an inner drive. So I never had like a written down ambition of where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. But when I found something that interested me, I was always all in. So from very early on, I mean, I actually loved going to school, and I had very good teachers. And I mean, I had more or less the problem of choosing what to do because I loved so many topics. Yeah. So I think for me that has been important that I have been able to be passionate about a lot of things. And I think ironically, maybe then later in life when you get into like high level activities on several areas then in your life, I mean, then you have to prioritize. And then you need to actually find the difference between what is the joy of mastering and what is actually pure joy, because this is like what's really triggering your motivation. So, but we can come back to that later. But I think for me, I mean, growing up, I mean, I was very interesting in sports at the same time as I was quite academic. Yeah. So I think school was something I did with my full heart, but still, I mean, my identity was more like my sports person. So I played volleyball till I was 26. And on, I mean, more or less the highest level you get in Norway. And I think for me, that's about the process of learning. I mean, I love to learn. So I never had like an ambition that I would go to the national team or that I should win that match, but I always wanted to perform better. And I think that's in general what's driving me, not my ambition to results, but my ambition to always learn. So I think that's more like the general part of it. And also, when I then graduated from videregående, which is like junior
High school.
college or something, yeah, and then I was very like puzzled what to do because, as you say, coming from a small town, I mean, we didn't really have the perspective of the corporate world or what the opportunities was. I mean, going maybe off to some other country for a larger university. I actually like just took the book of all the different educations you could have in Norway, and I read it, I mean, from page one to page 100, and I just started listing up what I wanted to do, and ended up actually then at a scientific university in Trondheim studying maths and physics. And the reason for that was actually that I wanted at that time, I thought going into research regarding medicine Yeah, and I think that was a bit strange, I mean, looking back, but I thought, yeah, then I can really learn more about the sciences and at the same time do something very constructive. So I entered that, and I mean, a few years in, I mean, we had some visits from the hospital and they were like, oh, if you come to us, you can see like open brain surgery and everything. And I was like,
all right,
okay,
there we go.
I will never be able to do that without thinking.
Okay, done with that.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So then it was like, okay, yeah, I have to do something else. Yeah. And I mean, also, I mean, if you, I don't know if you've ever been to a university class where there's just mathematics people, but as you said in the beginning, I mean, not that many girls. I mean, people sitting with their outside coat when they're inside, because I mean, they have like special needs for not feeling insecure. And I mean, there's a lot of things going on in there. And I think for me, then, I mean, I felt that going full academic, then I would stay at the university, and I didn't want that. So I took a lot of finance classes to make my education a bit more corporate. I was again just very open that I want to have a job where I can learn so that I can take better decisions on what to do next. So I actually started as a finance trainee, because then you get to move around a lot. And
let me ask you, from your town in Fredrikstad, there are some towns in the world, not just Norway, another place in the world, that the modus operandi, the feel, the vibe of that town or location is very high level. Everybody's successful.
Yeah.
Are there other women from Fredrikstad, your friends that you grew up with, who also achieve such high level as women? I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Was that a thing amongst your female friends, or are you one of the few?
I think that based on my friends, I mean, my friends are still my friends today. And I think even though we are a smaller group than we were then, I mean, my closest friends, they have also left Fredrikstad and they have also taken a long education. Looking at the class I was a part of then growing up, I mean, we were 27 people and five took higher education.
What are you saying? 20 of 27 people in Videregående, which is high school.
No, in ungdomsskole, only five went to academic classes in Videregående. Yeah.
Of 27 people in normal like grammar school, only five went on to high. What really?
Yeah.
What did the other 22 do?
No, then you can do like the more like practical education. So you can become like not a nurse, but like a social worker or a carpenter. Yeah. So like practical education.
That's the environment you're from.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were special from like grammar school.
Well, I don't know. But I think that also is kind of like helpful maybe, because then you understand quite early that you have a talent that not everybody has, so you can kind of feel that you are achieving something. I mean, growing up maybe today in Oslo, I mean, and you have a class of 26 and everyone is brilliant, I mean, so I think maybe that was an advantage and not a disadvantage.
Well said. And when you started your job and working and starting the corporate world, when you started, did you go in and not think that there was any difference between the work life of a man or work life of a woman? When was the first time? Do you remember the first time you're like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't different. Yeah, you're laughing, so this should be good.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I am. And there's actually like two episodes, both from my first year of working. That was quite, I think, eye-opening. And when it comes to this man-woman concept, I mean, there was a lot of other things, of course, you also learn when you start to work. But I think in the department that I started had been, I think there had been one girl there before me, but I was like the second girl ever in that department. And They had like these traditions and everything. And one of them was that every year they went off a couple of days to like this seminar, internal seminar. And there was supposed to be like you take this sauna and everything. And then suddenly, I mean, almost like in the car going there, it's like, oh my God, but you are also here and we are going to the sauna, and but we don't usually use clothes when we're in there. And they were like, yeah, okay, so now you're thinking about that. Yeah. So I think just experiencing how little they kind of reflected about girls being girls, that's kind of a positive thing. But also, I mean, they had absolutely no understanding how I, for like couple of weeks, had been thinking about what are we going to do, how are they going to solve that. And probably if something like that had happened now, I would have asked right out. But I mean, you're new, you're the youngest one, you don't really ask those kind of questions. But have you remembered that I'm actually a girl and I don't want to be naked with you guys? Yeah. So that was like an awkward kind of thing. And but other than that, I think when you are young and people come out from the same schools and the same classes, I mean, the equality is somewhat there. But when we then looked at the leaders that were currently in the company, I mean, I had one experience that I think I will always remember, and that has been quite key for me as well. And that was one of the senior manager then at that company. And she had held a presentation where I was present. And I think she thought of it as a fun anecdote from her private life. And she told us that this weekend her son had had his confirmation. I mean, I don't know if that's the English word. Yeah, but
Same word. Yeah. Yep.
So he was like 15 years old and he stood up in this, this party, and he held a speech where he thanked his mother for being able to participate. And she was so proud of him. And I'm sitting there quite young and reflecting, oh, so it wasn't even sure thing for your son that you would be able to prioritize his confirmation party. And she said it like a proud thing, because, I mean, in her world, which more or less was, of course, the man's world at the time, she had to be working twice as hard, being twice as tough, and being more of a man than any of the man leaders. And I think for me, that became such like a proof that some things need to change. We can't have women leaders based on being better than men at the men's game. And I think that has also, I think, changed a lot on these 17 years.
What year was that story? About what time?
That's 2005.
In 2005.
Yeah.
And this recording is taking place in 2022. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's flip this around.
Yeah.
So we spent time now where you started. Now let's flip it around to where you are today. So instead of before you were looking up, now this neuron you're looking down. You're a senior vice president with Oracle IT. And you're in a role in which you can shape the entire environment as you want. You can help other women. You can help men to understand things better. Can you tell me, how do you approach that, especially with these two really good stories that affected you and obviously you sit there in front of your mind? How do you take that into your leadership style, being being a superstar from Fredrikstad? Love the Fredrikstad.
I will put that on my resume.
I'm a superstar from Fredrikstad.
No introduction needed. I think I take it quite seriously, because I think we all have heard this expression. I mean, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And that's what it's all about. It's about the culture. And to be able to do something with culture, you need to actually be quite frank, and you need to be quite visible, and you need to actually confront people when they do something that you're not okay with. And for me, as now a leader of quite a large organization, I mean, I both do it in the details. When someone says something in a meeting that I don't think is okay, I actually respond and I say, we don't have to say it like that.
Let me interrupt you, but do you say that, because this is, everybody listening right now wants me to ask this question. I can hear a million people saying that. Do you respond immediately at that moment, or do you wait to the end of the meeting and pull them aside? What do you do?
And that depends, of course, who others is in the meeting. If we have maybe a client in the meeting, then I would just send a look and then I will have the talk later. But if it's in an internal meeting with only people from Work IT, I would do it directly. And I think that's important because that means that something is what I can put on a slide and have in a presentation. But I also have to live it every second I'm at the job. So, I have since I came into this role, I mean, I've been very focused on psychological safety. And I always brag about this study that Harvard, I mean, they did for Google back, I think it was in 2017, the Aristoteles Project. And they find out, I mean, if you have a well-performing team, what is then the difference with from other teams? And they found, of course, so many things about competence and, I mean, how many girls and men and other diversity factors going into that team. But they found also the most important thing, more or less like a binary parameter. That is if you have psychological safety or not. And that is actually about being able to be the full you also when you are at work. You understand that even though I'm different in some way, I have full respect and I have full respect to everyone else, regardless if they're different from me or not. And I think that having like 100% focus on everyone deserving the same amount of respect, regardless of where you are in the hierarchy or what kind of role you have or how, what kind of experience you have, I think that is really, really important for me. And then you have to be also quite direct when somebody is not showing respect of others, or else that will just be like fluffy PowerPoint, and I don't want to be a fluffy PowerPoint. So I really believe in this psychological safety. So I spend a lot of time with my leaders, making sure that they are close to their team and they work with the culture in their teams, so that we make sure that everyone can fit in. But that doesn't mean that they need to become like everybody else. They should actually come in and change the total team being who they are. Yeah.
So this is an amazing concept, psychological safety. So for those leaders out there that are listening, where should they start? Because a bunch of them are going, I love what Annette is saying. I should incorporate that into my leadership style.
Yeah.
Where do I even start? You talked about Google had some. Can you repeat
the
name?
And I will absolutely recommend everybody to just Google that, the Aristoteles Project. So it's Harvard Business School that did a research project for Google, where Google compared different teams in their organization to understand what makes a high performance team. Yeah. So you will find a lot of research material regarding that. And I think also, I mean, at least in Norway now, we are discussing a lot about diversity management. And that is also based on a lot of the same principles, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And just trying to connect the dots. Currently now, the whole world after the lockdown, the work from home movement is strong, very strong. And now let's tie the work from home, work from office, which is very difficult to get people back. Yes. And then put into that mix psychological safety, because that's interesting to mix all that together, right?
Yeah.
As a leader, how are you dealing with that? Getting people back into office. I'm making the assumption that you're having trouble because everybody's having trouble.
Right? And but that depends what your goal is. If your goal is to get people back the way it was, then probably you have a problem. but if your goal is to make work, I mean, like a hybrid flexible environment, then maybe you don't have a problem. So I think basically, I mean, this is simple psychology, but I think when people are forced back, I mean, they don't want to go. But if you make coming back enjoyable, then they will choose to go. And of course, someone needs like a little bit of a push to get there. But we are focusing very much on, I mean, just like the surface, when you come into your office, it should feel welcoming. It should feel like a place where I want to go when I want to cooperate and talk and discuss things with my colleagues. If it's just a surface where there's a lot of desks and a lot of screens, I mean, that tells you that, okay, you can sit here and be super productive, but I can stay at home and still be super productive. So when you go to the office, it's actually not to be super productive. It's to be working together with others in a different way than you do on Teams.
And but there's that critical there's that critical mass, right? Because if you're only having 10, 15 people come into the office and you have a huge office, it feels so lonely. So there's a is that right balance to get that certain number, and then all of a sudden people want to come back to the office. But you're going back to psychological safety, working from home for those 2 years, a lot of people found a lot of psychological safety, a lot of social safety, a lot of everything safety. And as a leader, I guess what you're saying, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, is that there are times when it's okay for people to work from home. That that's okay in that situation, right?
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think looking, I mean, in the back in the history, I mean, the workplace, the way it has been historically, I mean, that has been optimized from extrovert people. I mean, being an introvert person sitting at an open office location, I mean, 5 days a week, they are probably sleeping the whole weekend. but now they can actually regulate their week a bit better. And I think we need to understand that people are different. People are in different situations. I mean, some have small children, someone are alone, someone are very young, living like together with five other young people in like a collective apartment. And I mean, so we have to try to understand that you can't have like one size fits all. You have to make it personal. But still, I think it's important to really emphasize that being a team is more than being just a sum of individuals. So if you're able to sell the concept of being a team actually also means building relationships, then you understand that some part of that relationship needs to take place in the same room. Doesn't have to happen every week, but it has to happen on occasion. And in Oracle IT, I mean, we have people sitting on multiple locations. So for one team, it doesn't actually help that everybody comes to the office because they don't come to the same office. So I think we just have to have an open mind and to be, I think, close to each and every one in our teams and understand, okay, what works for me as your leader, what works for you as an employee, and what works best for the full team. I mean, this is give and take, but it has to be a process where everybody feel that they have ownership to the model that they agree on in that team.
I think what you said is beautiful, and I'm going to challenge you on this.
Yeah.
Everything you said, is that applicable to before the lockdown? And is it the same after the lockdown, or are you a different type of leader, or are you recommending people to change their leadership style, or is it same? Have you reflected on that?
I have reflected a little bit on it. And I think for me personally, I think it's easier now to stand up for this way of working. Before the lockdown, I mean, I feel that it was not so, I mean, it was a prestige almost to be at the office. And I mean, going really far back, you should be there the earliest in the morning and be the last one to leave. And I mean, for me, that is old kind of leadership. I don't believe in it because I believe in trust. And I trust my employees that they are doing what they're supposed to do, regardless if they're sitting next to me or they're sitting at home or they're sitting somewhere else. And I think that is easier to understand now, because when we have had the lockdown and the pandemic now for 2 years on and off, there's very difficult to be a critic saying, well, people didn't work. I mean, the productivity for almost every company, they went up. So, I mean, we have proven that people, we can trust them, even though we don't see them. They are doing their job and they are very productive when they are sitting at home. But over time, I think, at least in IT, I mean, with the talent market being, I mean, the demand is higher than the supply of IT talent right now. Yeah. We have to make sure that the people we have, they want to stay with us, and they want to stay with us for as long as possible. And then we know that the buffer for changing your job, that is how well you know your colleagues. If your colleagues are also more or less your friends, and you have like a really good social relationship in addition, that you like your tasks and you like the vision and where we are going. I mean, that bond is what makes the organization strong. And that's the part of coming to the office, not if you're doing your job. Everyone is doing their job, but coming together at the office, that's more about making these bonds that make the organization as a whole stronger.
I love everything you said. And you know what I love? We started this whole discussion talking about you being a woman, and you are such a strong leader, and you don't talk at all mentioning the sexes at all. And so congratulations to you, because you're talking about these are the steps to be a great leader. With the last few seconds we have left on this episode, and this has been wonderful, Netta, what last words of wisdom would you like to leave all us poor people who grew up in real populated cities? Okay, I'm teasing you now.
That's fine.
but seriously, you have so much knowledge, so much experience, and proven experience that actually works. So what was the last thing you'd like to tell all these leaders listening to you who are so impressed right now? They want to have one more nugget of gold from you. What's your last words?
Well, that's very difficult, but I think, I mean, we've already talked about trust. I mean, that's a baby for me. My second baby, I think, which is really what I think leadership is all about, that is the why. If you are not able to understand and find your why with your organization and your journey at work, how will all the others working for you be able to find their whys? And as human beings, we need a why to make sense of the how and the what. And I think for me, that is really crucial, that when you get to work, try to sit and reflect a little bit more on the why. And I think going back actually to what you said about the sexes, I think being a woman now, myself having two children, I mean, we can't work 24/7. We have to take breaks. And I think, and I tell my people that when you take breaks, you become a better employee, because then you get other experiences from other parts of your life that makes you reflect on what you do at work. And it makes you better, both on the why and the what and the how. So I think that having an employee that has a full life is a better employee than one that is at Orkla all the time and only thinking about Orkla, because you will miss out on impulses from other arenas that will actually make you reflect better on what you did yesterday and what you will do tomorrow. So I think that's probably my last nugget.
Yeah. Well, that was a big nugget. My God, that was the size of the Empire State Building. That was huge. Netta Berger, Senior Vice President of Supply Chain Digital at Orkla. You are a true leader. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, please subscribe to the podcast. We're on Spotify, iTunes, even iTunes not around, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, we're everywhere. And from the bottom of my heart, Netta, it has been an honor and a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much. And to everybody out there, you take care, be safe, and listen to what Netta said. Find your who. Focus on your why, and you'll find your what. And that's it. You're amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, take care. Till the next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast. At Cognizant, we help our clients modernize technology, reimagine processes, and transform experiences so they can stay ahead in our fast-changing world. Together, we're improving everyday life. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and everywhere.